Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Good Friday, the busiest travel day of the year. You might be sitting in a traffic jam waiting for a train. You might be being bussed away from a station from which there are no trains running. Or you could be navigating your way around the eco-nutters at Heathrow Airport. Whatever you're doing, stay exactly where you are for the next 3 hours as we keep you informed about everything that is going on. Up first, we'll bring you the latest from Northern Ireland, where last night a journalist was shot dead as some of the worst riots in decades took place in Derry. Dissident IRA groups are now being blamed for the terrorist incident, which resulted from hours of petrol bombing, attacks on the police and stone-throwing demonstrators. Now, I don't know about you, but that is one of the worst headlines I think I've seen all of this year. I thought we'd been told that a hard border in Ireland would mean a return to the bad old days of the Troubles. Well, guess what? It looks to me as though the Troubles have never actually gone away. We'll be crossing live there very shortly. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll also be crossing live to Heathrow to find out what the eco-narcissists are up to today as they try to disrupt everyone's Easter holidays. Isn't it great that Emma Thompson has taken the trouble to fly all the way back from Los Angeles to tell us to stop flying anywhere? Are these people serious? Are these people having a laugh? Are these people completely and utterly deluded? Activists are calling for a climate emergency declaration from the government. Well, guess what? The government is still on holiday. The government are not sitting in Westminster. It's Easter weekend. Get the hell out of London, get the hell off Waterloo Bridge, and get the hell back to whichever hole you swam out from. 0344 499 1000. We'll be checking in with the Battle of the Sexes a little bit later on, and the Mueller report into Donald Trump in the US of A. And because it's Easter, we might even have a little chocolate tasting to bring you as well. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Lots of you are calling in. We will get to you. We're going to talk to Grant Harrold in a moment about Meghan Markle and the impending royal birth, of course. Paul says on Twitter, I've just seen a young woman being interviewed on Sky. Poor girl was in tears, claiming we are the last generation on Earth. Whoever is brainwashing these kids are extremely dangerous and they need rounding up. I think that's right. Grandpa says, most likely it stems from climate change absolutism in schools. These people actually want to jam the roads so much, we just throw away our cars. A Zero Carbon says, what would help is to read the peer-reviewed science or material from the authors of this science. Applying the precautionary principle to the uncertainty in the science would lead you to better appreciate where Extinction Rebellion is coming from. That's absolute rubbish, right? Because the point about what Extinction Rebellion are doing and what they are saying, which is completely and utterly misconceived and wrong, which is that the Earth is about to die. The Earth is about to overheat to such an extent that there will be climate refugees, that we will be fighting wars over water, that the food will all run out. It's all absolute and utter nonsense. Dean says the police won't be dancing in the streets or skateboarding if football fans take to the streets demonstrating like these Extinction Rebellion people. Well, I think that's absolutely right. Let's talk to Colin, who's in Newcastle. Hello, Colin.
Good morning, Mike.
Morning. How are you doing?
We spoke before. You know I'm a retired policeman.
Yes.
Obviously, what's happening in London is the other extreme what's happened in Northern Ireland. First of all, I'd like to not condolences, but to the Irish police.
It's terrifying, isn't it, that the Irish police are having to put up with someone firing live rounds of ammunition at them.
They're very, very cops. I was there last year for a conference hosted by the PSNI.
Yeah.
And to be honest, my heart goes out to those guys. They're very brave. admire them a lot. I wouldn't like to do what they do. No. Just to first of all say, we British cops, thank goodness we're not in Northern Ireland. But getting back to today's matter, this is the other extreme, the other side of the coin, where these people are non-violent, non-threatening, they're not shooting at us, not throwing bricks.
But they are disrupting day-to-day business for people.
Yeah, of course they are. But is that a criminal offence? I know the Home Secretary said use the full weight of the law, and I'd like to know what law he thinks we're using or we can use, because if they're not threatening, they're not causing violence, they're sitting down peacefully, they have a right under the Human Rights Act, endorsed by the Conservatives, to right to demonstrate and such like. And also...
People asked me this question yesterday, and I think I'm right in saying that you do have to ask permission to demonstrate still, because you need to make sure that the authorities are on your side when you do so. What you're not permitted to do is to occupy, for example, Waterloo Bridge for 4 days in a row, preventing all movement of traffic backwards and forwards across that thoroughfare. Because if I parked my car there, you can bet your bottom dollar it would not be there for more than 5 minutes before somebody came and towed it away.
Yes, a car's not human beings. So that obstruction...
Well, what if I was sitting in it, though?
If we couldn't get you out, that's happened before. We had stories where policemen tried to use people out of cars, they smashed windows, and that policeman ended up being prosecuted for criminal damage. So that's the law of the land. So unfortunately, if you sat in a car, if you scared,
are you telling me I could go take my car today, finish this show, go and park it on Battersea Bridge, sit in it, and they wouldn't do anything? I don't believe that.
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, I'd love to say we could jack up your car and put it in the back of a van, but I've tried that once before, and it's not working. Now, the only offence they're doing is committing obstruction of the Highway Act. It's a Highways Act.
I'm sure that there are a few drug offences going on as well, I would imagine.
You can imagine that, but until we got proof, which is what we need, evidence of that.
How about walking past and smelling somebody smoking a joint? I mean, you know, that's proof, isn't it?
No, not. Theresa May introduced new stop and search laws back in 2015, where we had to have specific intelligence related to drug offences. And under the training we got, that is not enough to stop and search someone.
Really? So again, somebody smoking a joint in front of a police officer is not sufficient?
You said smelling it. Smelling it is not enough. If you smoke it, that's an offence in front of the police officers. Then we'd arrest you.
Well, how do you think they're smelling it if they're not smoking it?
Well,
you see where we're going here. Colin, you're ringing me up to tell me something that can't be done when it's blatantly obvious that they could do anything they want if they want to do it. But clearly, they don't want to do it because they don't know what to do.
Well, no, because we haven't got the laws to do it.
Yeah, they've got plenty of laws. They've arrested 400 people, Colin. What have they arrested them for?
Highway.
Well, what have they arrested? What have they arrested them for?
Obstruction of the highway. Right. 5 minutes ago. So what else should we do?
Well, we should lock them up. I told you yesterday, if you were listening to the show, we should fine them 40,000 quid each and make them pay back the money that has been missing from the Exchequer thanks to their recklessness. And we should ban them and give them banning orders, like you can ban people from football grounds, ban them from central London. There are many ways you can stop this happening, but they haven't got the imagination or the will to do it.
Well, fine. We'll go and tell that to the Home Secretary. Why did he
You just asked me what we could do. I've just told you the answer.
We'll tell that to the Home Secretary.
Well, I will if he comes on. He hasn't rung me today.
Well, no, you ring him up. You have the guts to ring him up and tell him.
I've got guts to do any number of things, Colin.
No, you haven't.
Oh, you're telling me I haven't got any guts?
No, of course not.
What the hell are you on?
What the hell are you on?
Have you been smoking some funny cigarettes or something? I'm not even sure you are a real police officer, Colin. You just keep saying you are.
Yes, mate, I've retired. If you also listen, I said I retired 3 months ago.
Yeah, I know, but you used to be a working police officer and you used to ring this show regularly to say you were still working as a police officer.
Yes, I retired after 30 years. Mike.
Right.
At least my service spent...
Well, you seem to have lost your marbles in the meantime.
No, Mike, I haven't lost my marbles. I put my life...
You've just told me I have no guts, which I find to be particularly offensive, and I don't know where you get that from.
Well, we find it particularly offensive that you criticise us, but you haven't got the guts to criticise the people who invent the law.
I criticise the Home Secretary, I criticise Parliament, I criticise the government all the time, Colin. What are you talking about?
Did you just say that they should introduce those laws? Well, why don't you phone up the Home Secretary, your Home Office, explain to them that this is what you're...
They're on holiday, Colin.
Well, next time they come back...
Okay, then. All right, Colin. I'll ring them up and tell them on your behalf. Okay, how's that? Thanks very much indeed. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Now, some of you will have been very disturbed to wake up this morning to the news that there's been a murder in Northern Ireland. There has not been a terrorist attack. There has not been a terrorist incident, although that is indeed what the police are calling it. This is a murder, straightforward and straight up there. A woman, a young woman, 29 years of age, has been shot dead by dissident IRA people in a demonstration in Derry, which the police have characterised as a situation where they just wanted to cause trouble, where they just wanted to make sure that violence was the winner, where they wanted to throw petrol bombs at police cars and police vans, set fire to a few things, and actually shoot people. You know what? I'm disgusted by what's been going on in Northern Ireland, and I've been disgusted by what's been going on in Northern Ireland for quite some decades from now. We were told, of course, after the Good Friday Agreement, that it was all fine and dandy to get rid of loads and loads of terrorists and take them all out of the prison cells that they were sitting in and free them all, because that would be the best way to make sure peace continued in Northern Ireland. We keep being warned now over the Brexit scenario that if we don't have an open border, if we have a hard border, then the troubles will return. Well, let me tell you something. The troubles have never gone away. And we're going over there now to talk to Ricky Thompson, news editor at U105 in Belfast. Ricky, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us, Ricky. I mean, it's true to say, is it not, that the dissident IRA factions have been sort of knocking around now for several years, involved in sort of low-level crime, petty crime, a little bit of kneecapping here and there, a little bit of violence here and there. But this is a massively upscaled event, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, there have been elements of criminality that have, of course, continued on from the troubles. We did have the peace agreement in 1998, but unfortunately, there have been some factions who have continued what they would call their struggle through the years. And most recently, of course, in Derry, we had a bomb explode outside the courthouse there. So this is just the latest escalation, and obviously the worst possible type of escalation of violence that we've seen. And it's very sad, as you said, 29-year-old Ira McKee, a journalist doing her job out in the streets in the Craigan area of Derry, and just caught up in shots which were aimed at police by dissidents. It's really tragic news for everyone here, everyone across the UK and the world seeing this morning. And really, there's so many tributes being paid by local journalists and politicians and people who knew her. She really had such an impact on people.
Right. And what's believed to be the catalyst for this particular eruption last night? Because, you know, as you say, there was a bomb recently. But nobody, certainly on the mainland of this country, realised that things had sort of heated up again, if you like.
Yes, well, the sad reality of it is that although most things that do go on, there are still, as you mentioned earlier, kneecappings, as they're called, and other shootings, punishment shootings. Mm. All of these things have been going on in the background, and they're reported here on a weekly, almost, you know, every few days, we have something else reported, and I suppose this wouldn't be picked up more across the UK. Mm. It has been rumbling on, and It has come to a head last night. What happened was police were moving in to do some searches in the Craigan area of Derry. They had intelligence that led them to believe there were firearms and ammunition which were being stored in certain areas. They were moving in to disrupt that and to find those items, because they were afraid that dissidents were planning to target police over the Easter weekend. This all ties into the annual commemorations for the Easter Rising in 1916. Right. And so the police were being proactive and going in there. And of course, the presence of the police in the area caused people to come out onto the streets, mostly young people we've seen. And unfortunately, it led to this incident. And there has been footage that was filmed, which seems to be from the side of the rioters. And it shows a gunman with a handgun firing in the direction of police. You can hear the shots and you can hear screaming. It's really it's horrible stuff. And the fact that this is happening still in Derry in 2019, 21 years on from the Good Friday Agreement, which was supposed to have ended all of this.
And also many, many more years on and many more decades on from Bloody Sunday, of course, which we are now focused on because of the upcoming prosecution of one of the British soldiers. In fact, I think there's two now who are being charged and going to face trial over it. And you wonder, I wonder, and I don't know whether you're able to talk about this at all, but I wonder, Ricky, whether the whole kind of dredging up of the Bloody Sunday effects and what happened that day have also kind of ratcheted things up a little bit.
Well, as you say, these things have never gone away,
yeah.
And there have been, and as you mentioned in your intro, Brexit has been in play as well. People have been talking about a return to violence at the borders, and I suppose a number of things have culminated. I'm not sure if they have directly fed into what happened last night. It seems to have been a direct response to police going in with their planned operations to find those guns and ammunition, and you know, that's not unusual at times whenever police are carrying out operations in certain parts of Northern Ireland. They are attacked and they expect it, and that's why they go in force to defend themselves.
But I'm assuming they're not expecting live rounds to be fired at them, because that really is, as I said earlier, a kind of a step up in aggression, isn't it?
Yes, well, I suppose they wouldn't expect it. They certainly wouldn't hope for it. It's always a possibility, and they're trained for this. And again, that's why they go in, and they have armoured Land Rovers. They go in with their heavy gear.
It looks like they lost a couple of those last night to the firebombs, though.
Yes, well, a couple of vehicles were hijacked and burnt out.
Yeah.
Again, it's just to see those pictures coming out of Derry is distressing for everyone. And so many people have been calling on the dissidents and anyone else involved, the rioters, to just stop.
That
it's as simple as that. People are just saying stop. At this has gone too far. There's a journalist, Leona O'Neill, who was tweeting last night. She was standing next to Lyra whenever she was shot.
Yeah.
And she called the ambulance, and she said that she's just sick to her stomach. And she covers stories in Derry on a daily basis. Mm. She's one of the biggest voices in journalism in the city. And she was there covering it, and as were other journalists, as was Lyra. And it's just so unfortunate that...
Yeah.
Shots were fired indiscriminately towards police by.
But this is the thing. I mean, that's what I find so ridiculous, that we're even just talking in quite a calm way about this, as though it's something that we should be expecting to happen. I find it staggering, really, after all these years, Ricky, that we're still having to face this nightmare of violence. I mean, what's the community doing? Are they outing this person who shot the gun? Are they making sure that they're cooperating with the police? I suspect the answer to that is no.
Well, the police face an ongoing difficulty in that respect. Mm. In that many people in the community, of course, do denounce it. 99.9% of people across Northern Ireland would be against the people carrying this out. And the problem is that what people are saying is that this small group of people who just want to carry this on don't listen. They don't care about the community. They don't care about the people around them. They're just focusing on what they want, and they're just going ahead. We've had politicians from all sides of the community coming out and condemning this, calling on them to stop. People who may have links with those carrying out these acts are telling them to stop, but it just... The message just doesn't seem to be going through, unfortunately.
I mean, funnily enough, I was listening to an earlier guest on The Breakfast Show that John Nicholson did, and the earlier guest was saying that Martin McGuinness actually was quite a significant figure in Derry while he was alive, and that he kind of was able to keep a lid on quite a lot of this paramilitary activity. Is that your understanding as well?
To be honest, I wouldn't know the intricacies of what relationships Martin McGuinness would have had with the people in the city. Of course, he was an IRA commander in the early days of the Troubles. He would have had a certain level of influence, but it could be said that certainly in the latter years, the elements who have sprung up since the Good Friday Agreement wouldn't have been in agreement with the likes of Martin McGuinness and others who turned to a peaceful way of things, and maybe, you know, even his voice wouldn't necessarily have been listened to. And perhaps it is that just maybe that he is gone. Maybe there are certain elements of influence that are being lost in the city. But hopefully that's not the case, and that this will be a catalyst for people to really step back and just look at what's happening and think this should not have happened, and nothing like this should happen again.
Nope.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, it's been a bit of a weird show today. There's been a lot of interesting people ringing in. Lots of them are out there on the Twitter sphere now. I've just had a tweet from Brexit Battalion, who's shown me a picture of Oliver Twist holding a bowl out and says, hashtag child abuse, Mike, because I've got Oliver here with me. Very good morning to you. Or good afternoon,
good
I should say.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Yeah,
he
good.
Is, of course, Oliver Graham. He's my third oldest child,
third.
Right? Third oldest child, oldest of the two that we have currently living with us in Sussex. Yeah. And you're here to taste some chocolate because we have Mark Machado here, who is the owner and operator of Confectionery Cast.
I am, yes.
Which is a podcast about chocolate, right?
Yeah, so what we do is we get someone well-known, like yourself possibly,
okay.
And we just talk to them about what their favourite chocolate is.
Okay.
They pick a chocolate and then we chew
like,
over it.
Like or, one chocolate bar, that sort of thing? Or can it be a particular type of chocolate?
Oh, no, so it's a particular chocolate bar. So it might be, for example, Boost. So you might come on and talk to me about, you know, your relationship
with Boost. I mean, I could talk about most things. I'm not sure I could do half an hour on Boost.
Well, normally we do stray off the topic quite a
lot.
Yeah. But normally what it does is it does trigger memories from back back in the day. Because also the British have quite unique... We have quite a unique relationship with chocolate, right? Because we sell it everywhere and we eat it all the time, where in other cultures...
There's an awful lot of it as well now, isn't there? I mean, every single place you go, you don't just get, you know, a Kit Kat. You can now get about five different varieties of Kit Kat. Should we ask Oliver what his favourite chocolate is? What is your favourite chocolate?
My personal favourite is probably Ferrero Rocher because...
Is it?
Good choice.
I do.
Really?
I just like the hazelnut and it's got like Nutella, which you know I like.
How many of those have you eaten at one time?
I got a lot of Christmas, so I do.
Right. We actually had some... one of my favourites is chocolate peanuts and raisins together, which you can't get in a lot of places now.
Right.
In pick and mix places, like in cinemas, they've stopped doing it because of the nut allergy people.
Yeah.
And I've got a little country store that I go to down in Sussex. It's like a farm shop, and they do little packets of chocolate.
Is that homemade over there?
I think so. Chocolate, nuts and raisins together.
Oh, wow.
And it's fantastic. We had some last night while we were watching Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
Don't tell his mother.
Oh, well, she's
she might be listening.
Yes,
yeah. Anyway, so we've got some Easter eggs here.
Yeah, so...
So tell us about Easter.
So 80 million eggs are sold every year.
Blimey.
For Easter. The average child gets... People spend £56 per child.
Really?
On eggs.
That's a lot of money, isn't it?
So parents spend about £25.
We actually haven't done many Easter eggs this year, have we?
Because
so far, his older sister brought him one when she came to visit. But I think that's the only one you've had, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. So this is... I can catch up.
So this is like a sort of busman's holiday here.
So the average child gets about 8 eggs a year.
Wow.
Which they eat over about 4 days.
Okay.
Which I think is quite a long time, actually.
And is there a sort of number one egg that people like?
So, in general... What used to happen is you used to kind of get a hollow egg, which was branded up with your favourite chocolate bar, and you'd get two or three bars of your favourite chocolate.
Right.
But this year, there's been some innovation in
this.
Yeah, so for years, chocolate fanatics like myself have been saying, do you know what? I'm a bit bored of this plain old egg.
Right.
So in response to this, the big companies have released eggs which contain some of their favourite chocolate bars within it.
Okay.
Right in front of me now, I've got the giant big Cadbury's egg, which is a Cadbury's crunchy egg, which has crunchy in it.
Now, I see you're doing what I do. I was going to ask you, because I had this conversation with somebody else about the etiquette of breaking the egg. I break it while it's still inside the wrapper. I do exactly what you just did, which hit it with my fist and it cracks inside the wrapper. Yeah, like, see, if I do, just give it a go. Right, here we go. You do that, and then it stays within there, right? But it's in fact ready to eat.
Oh, right. Because I think that's the most polite way of doing it. Because you don't. If I'm going to offer you this egg, which I've just smashed.
Thank you very much.
Outside the wrapper.
Yeah.
But you probably don't want my fist having been all over the chocolate.
Not really. No. There's nothing inside it though.
No, but within the egg, within the chocolate, there should be bits of crunchy in it.
Oh, wow. Republic of Mike Graham, you know what to do. 0344 499 1000. It is, of course, Good Friday. It is the beginning of Easter weekend. Loads of you will be heading off in some direction or another. Good luck if you're going by train, particularly if you're going to try and get from Euston, because Euston is shut for 4 days. The roads are all going to be messed up, and of course Swampy and his mates are all going to be out and about over at Heathrow trying to stop you from flying anywhere. Let's talk to Will Geddes and see if he's got any good ideas of how we get rid of these idiots. Will, a very good morning to you. Happy Easter.
Good morning, Chief. Happy Easter to you too.
Now, listen, I had a great idea suggested to me by somebody the other day who said, why don't we just get rid of all their tents, right? Just sweep up all of the kind of street furniture that these people are carrying with them. They'll have nowhere to shelter, they'll have nowhere to sleep, and they'll end up having to disappear off.
Well, exactly. I think there are a number of different things that could be done, Mike, but I think that the biggest challenge is that the powers that be within, unfortunately, the police force, and I have some really good mates within the police force, and they've got a horrendous task on their hands right now, but the decision makers are considering whatever actions they take, how would it look in the Daily Mail tomorrow? And as a direct result, I know certainly friends of mine within the police who are very frustrated. They can't take more direct action, obviously, of removing those individuals that are, they've been given a dedicated area in Marble Arch, as you know, Mike, but they're illegally protesting and causing disruption across many parts of London, which will have major implications.
Well, this is right. I mean, we were just told by a former police officer that, they're not breaking any laws. Well, surely they're breaking all sorts of laws by occupying a bridge, which is by and large a highway, which is by and large a throughway, which is by and large a mode of transportation for people to get around the city. And what they're doing is causing complete and utter chaos in all sorts of other roads around the river because people are having to avoid Waterloo. Surely there's something we can do about them not being on Waterloo Bridge.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges is also that many of them are actually willingly wanting to get arrested. You know, it's their badge of honour to be arrested. And unfortunately, the police, with the protesting, have to release them. They come back and then fundamentally you're back in a vicious cycle where it's not changing. But going to your point, absolutely. The bridges are the arterial connection from north to south of London, as we both know, and many of the listeners will know. It's critical for our infrastructure. It's critical for the police to respond to incidents. I mean, the Violent Crimes Unit have had all leave cancelled for the entire Easter weekend. So, we've got enough problems with stabbings, violent crime, as well as obviously an elevated level of terrorism threat to have to be dealing with these clowns who are running around, which, albeit I'm all for climate change. But you know what? The front page of the Mirror yesterday, I think, had more impact on me than this lot causing disruption to the rest of us Londoners.
Yes, absolutely right. How about this for a text from Jonesy, who says, that ex-copper must have been teaching the new recruits how to dance rather than nicking people. As a Millwall fan, I can guarantee if I tried to disrupt London, I'd be dragged to the back of the nearest police van to be advised where I was going wrong. Which he's right about, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I was having this debate with a friend of mine in the police yesterday, and we were talking about the difference between the footage that's been released of obviously police officers dancing along, skateboarding and doing good and stuff.
Which is pretty embarrassing, I have to say, Will. I'm not interested in community policing. I don't mind if they do that at Notting Hill Carnival, but not at this.
Well, exactly. That was our point. You know, at Notting Hill Carnival, you kind of get it. You know, it's a hearts and minds, and it's really important for the police to develop and to continually move these hearts and minds within communities. But to do it with an illegal demonstration, it's almost like collusion,
yeah,
Michael. I'm not a lawyer, but surely there are ASBOs. There are restricting public highways and causing an obstruction to the emergency services and the general public. I'm sure there's a long list of crimes that these individuals are perpetrating by taking up their encampments in areas which they're not authorised
to
do.
Yeah, right. I mean, we can enforce football banning orders. We can enforce banning orders for people to not go out at night. We can enforce people to stay in particular areas. Surely we can ban these people from, particularly the ones that have been arrested, and there's more than 400 of them, from ever coming back.
Well, absolutely. And there should be exclusion orders, obviously, from them not being able to rejoin and create that vicious cycle, as we were talking about before. But I think the fundamental concern is, you know, everybody, I think, understands climate change issues have to be addressed. And I think everybody in a positive sense would want to support that. But this is a counterproductive series of demonstrations which are just causing misery and mayhem, not only for the general public, but also the implications of the cost going on beyond this in terms of police officers needing to reclaim the leave. Many of them are working beyond the 12-hour stags that they're currently on.
Yeah.
Plus all the policing costs. There are over 1,000 police officers who have been deployed to deal with these situations, Michael.
Do you think there's an issue with the general belief that the people who are demonstrating are overly, I would say, qualified and middle class rather than working class oiks, football supporters, that kind of thing? You know, dare I say it, Brexit, pro-Brexit marchers, you know, and Tommy Robinson fans? Because if they were those, I'm sure that the police would be treating them differently. I'm also hearing that they're quite well sort of briefed legally, some of these protesters, so they kind of know their rights in a way perhaps that others don't. And maybe that's what the police are frightened of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and the police do have to follow the letter of the law, and quite rightly so. But, you know, we're looking at the hypocrisy to a certain extent. I was up in Oxford Circus yesterday, Mike, and I was wandering around having a look. Now, I'll tell you what, I saw an awful lot of plastic bags. I saw an awful lot of other elements, which I would have thought was on their sort of no-nos list of things that should be done and things they're trying to change. So, you know, look, I've had a few rounds with people on social media about this. But underlying it, yes, climate change is an important issue. But
well,
I think how they're going about it is not brilliant.
Yeah, but also climate change is an important issue, which has been treated as a very important issue for decades now. I mean, I said to people until I'm blue in the face, you know, why don't we impose a green tax on all the flights that we take out of this country? Why don't we put a massive green levy on all the energy that we buy from energy companies? Why don't we put a massive road tax on our cars and a huge and even bigger tax on the fuel that we put in those cars? And then you go, oh yeah, but we already do all that. You know, we're already paying a massive amount of money into the tax system because of climate change and because we're supposed to be doing something about it. But what I find astonishing is these people, Will, have literally got some kind of mass hypnosis problem going on where they actually believe the world is going to end.
Well, you know what? There's this kind of virtue signalling, and I'm just loving that phrase right now, Mike.
Me too.
Because there are a lot of individuals that I'm seeing that are connected to this, which I would challenge whether they are actually doing their contribution, their personal contribution to reducing carbon footprint. And I think fundamentally there are a number of celebrities that have turned up who I'm sure probably came in on their private jet. So, you know, there is some hypocrisy here, and there's ways to demonstrate. And I'm not against demonstration. I think protest and demonstration is important if it's done with a productive means to engage the populace.
Hello, John.
Why is the sheer hypocrisy of this that really gets to me?
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, you've got people flying across the Atlantic, I gather, Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
In order to protest about global warming. I mean,
it's incredible,
isn't it? I'm almost incoherent with it. And it's the same with what they're doing. We go camping on holiday because we can't afford anything better. But we pay for a campsite.
Yeah.
We clear up after this. The complete trashing that seems to be going on. I live nowhere near London, of course. If you really want to do something about global warming, get out in your garden, grow some vegetables, like Oh, yeah, like I do. I was just
plant some trees or something, right? Came.
And yeah, but words fail me. But you get people like Attenborough flying around the world in order to promote.
Imagine the carbon footprint of that show that he puts on, right?
Absolutely. And it's the same with the carbon footprint of these people who are creating chaos in London.
Yeah.
And why are the police allowing them to do it?
I've no idea. It beggars belief.
It's insane.
It is.
If I was to go camping somewhere in the middle of London, I'd be arrested with a
Also, do you know what, John? In my sort of young days, there used to be a guy walking up and down Oxford Street saying the end is nigh, right? He had a big... He was treated as a nutter, right? This guy was a nutter. However, we're now taking supposedly seriously the views of these people who tell us exactly the same. They might as well all have the same board walking up and down Waterloo Bridge saying the end is nigh. Well, I'm sorry, the end isn't bloody nigh.
The end of the world's come and go. It's just ludicrous.
Oh, I can't believe it. It's shocking.
I mean, I drive a vehicle because I live in Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
Need to get about.
You also pay an awful lot of tax to do so.
Pay a lot of tax to do so, and that's fair enough, and I agree with it. And I also use my vehicle to take people to and from hospital. I'm a member of the voluntary car service scheme.
Right.
And because, I mean, everywhere in Lincolnshire is a long way.
Well, I don't know how that you're supposed to live and get medical treatment if we're carbon neutral in 2025.
Well, it would be impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, there's car service, voluntary car service all over Lincolnshire. And the one I belong to has six drivers. Between us, we do about between 120 and 130 visits a month.
Yes.
I mean, the ambulance service couldn't cope with that.
Mm. No, of course not. Well, it can't cope now, the ambulance service. But if you had no ambulances at all...
The local doctors.
Well, what are you supposed to do? Take people backwards and forwards on a horse and cart? But let's talk to Ali Murphy, though, because there is an airline story to be done. As long as the airlines are still flying, and, of course, as long as Emma Thompson's around, the airlines will still be kept in business. Norwegian Air, one of the great success stories of recent years in the airline business, a budget airline. A lot of people now use it to fly to all parts of the world. They're in a bit of hot water, apparently, because it turns out they've got some very sexist policy, despite the fact that Norway is one of the least sexist places in the world, apparently. It's a gender-equal country. They say if you work for them and you are a woman, you have to wear high heels at all times. Ali, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Now, you're a former cabin crew with Virgin Atlantic, which used to have those great adverts of the women's and the men sort of strolling through the airport terminal looking terribly sexy and very, very sort of handsome and pretty at the same time. The men I'm talking about, by the way. and some great sort of red outfits, quite tight skirts, high heels for the women, all of that. It's all gone a bit mad now, hasn't it? Because did I not read that Richard Branson's now declared that the women don't have to wear makeup if they don't want to?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was quite happy with that because just anything that gives women choice and men choice is a good thing. I mean, the high heels, yeah, you might have looked sexy strutting through the airport in those heels, but you take that off, they were blood-filled. It was horrific. Those shoes were the worst shoes I've ever worn in my life, and I'm not the only one. There was a huge percentage of us that ended up in hospital having operations on our feet because of those heels.
Blimey.
I wasn't a fan of those things.
Well, so how have Norwegian Air managed to get away with it for so long in this day and age?
I have no idea. I mean, I guess, you know, uniform is something, you know, it represents the company, it represents the brand, but then you're putting on women to be uncomfortable at work and insisting that a certain gender wear something that they might find uncomfortable. If they want to, then great. I mean, a lot of women love wearing heels. It makes them feel powerful. It makes them feel sexy. All of those are things that we wear heels for, and that's great. They've got the option to do it. But if your feet are bleeding and you can only go to the lower heel if you bring a doctor's note,
which is what their rule was, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, it was like that at Virgin for a very long time. I'm not sure on the rules now since I left, but you had to have a doctor's note. I had to go to occupational health and prove that I couldn't wear the heels. There were high heels, mid heels, or low heels. You've got a choice of three heels, but either way, you might not necessarily be.
And the rule was red, right?
Always red, unless if you had the doctor's note and you weren't wearing the heels, you got to wear ugly black ones. You stuck out like a sore thumb.
Well, amazing. I'm looking at the story in the Times today, right? Apparently, they've got a 22-page dress code, Norwegian Air, in which it says that they must also wear makeup, although they can have light foundation, cream with colour or powder. False eyelashes are allowed unless they look strange.
I love that they put that addendum in there as well.
Yeah.
And it was the same at Virgin until recently, that you had to have that. And, you know, you want people at work who are representing your brand to be presentable, and you want them to have the face of the company. But I think in this day and age, you have to have choice about how you present yourself and how you make that face to the world. And I'm not necessarily saying being part of the great unwashed that go to work, but just being presentable in your own way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. But at the same time, there is a sort of give and take here, isn't there? Because if you are presenting yourself as an employee of a particular company, like, for example, when I go into a department store, I wouldn't expect to be treated by somebody who was kind of dressed in a slovenly way. And they wouldn't have to necessarily wear a uniform. But if they were sort of grubby, I mean, I'm in a pub the other day, right? And the guy behind the bar was so filthy that I was drinking with a couple of friends of mine. And we were like, you know, the guy actually smells quite bad. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, I'm not going back there until he's gone.
Exactly, yeah. You don't want that. And so, there has to be a line drawn, I think. But I don't see where high heels comes as, if you're not wearing high heels, then you must be a slovenly slob.
No, of course. I'm not conflating the two things. But what I'm saying is that, you know, it's reasonable, is it not, to expect people to be well turned out. And if their uniform is involved, they kind of have to be specific about what you can wear. A bit like school uniform. You know, when I was at school, you weren't allowed to wear platform shoes. But I did anyway.
That's the point. We all did, didn't we?
Yeah, I know. And also, you had to wear a white shirt. You couldn't wear a different coloured shirt. You know, you had to kind of go along with it.
I remember when I was at school, and this is something that really affected me as a woman, I had to, we had to wear our skirts a certain length, an inch below or inch above the knee, and I rebelled and wore really baggy, a long maxi skirt and baggy jumper, and I got into trouble for not wearing a shorter skirt.
Right.
So, and that blew my mind that the rather that a 14-year-old girl would rather show more leg at school than part.
Well, I've got some very bad news for you, because if you see the 14-year-old girls that go to school with my son now, I mean, they're barely wearing a skirt at all.
See, there's got to be a middle line somewhere, hasn't there?
Yeah, that really does. So, I mean, I guess the future for airline crew is going to get more and more relaxed then, and there's going to have to be presumably different choices. I think they've now got different choices of uniform that you can wear at Virgin, haven't they?
Yes, they do, yeah.
So you can wear trousers, for example, if you're a woman now.
And I think this is really an important point that nobody's really touched on, is that the cabin crew's job, you tend to be doing 12-hour plus shifts, and yet you're still expected to wear uncomfortable footwear or uniforms that are too tight or too, you know, you can't bend over in. So shouldn't our uniforms, whilst being smart and representative of the company, also be practical for the job that you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. I would also quite like to see some kind of dress code for the passengers, to be honest, because the way some people dress to get on a plane, particularly if they're going somewhere hot, is quite remarkable. I can't stand
now
people
that... I would completely agree with you there. No bikinis on board.
No bikinis. Also, none of those really horrible, like, shell suits that people wear, which I find personally quite offensive.
Or onesies. That was the new
onesies,
thing
that
when I was leaving. Yeah, everyone was wearing onesies on the flight.
Blimey,
they must have been completely naked in the toilet.
Yes.
Just trying to get
now, you must have, I'm not going to let you go before you tell me a funny story. You must have some funny stories of when you were a member of the cabin crew and finding people in strange situations or walking in on people or something. You must have something.
So, I guess actually, this is a good story regarding what you wear on flights. One time, it was a night flight, everybody was asleep, we're walking through the cabin, and we had to check people, the seatbelt signs came on, we had to check that people are safe, so we had to check the seatbelt signs.
Right.
And if people put their blanket over the top of their seatbelts, we have to see if that seatbelt's done up. So I was cruising through the cabin with my little torch, and there was a guy with a blanket on his lap, so I kind of lifted the blanket up to see if his seatbelt was on, and he had nothing on under there. Not his pants.
Tremendous.
Nothing.
Oh, dear. Shocking story. Well, I'm glad you had. I knew you'd have something like that to tell us. Ali, thank you very much indeed. Ali Murphy there, former cabin crew with Virgin Atlantic. When you were forced to wear high heels, apparently up to now, in Norwegian Air, you had to do the same. But that's likely to change. As I said, there is a middle ground. I wouldn't make anybody wear high heels. I can't imagine anything more uncomfortable. But you've got to still have some kind of standard of dress, have you not? 0344 499 1000. We're nearly done here, by the way. But coming up next, my son. Oliver is going to make his appearance, his debut appearance on the radio, because he's going to come in and taste some chocolate eggs. He can't believe his luck. He woke up this morning and I had to persuade him to come in to work with me. But once I told him there was going to be some free chocolate, he was very happy. Mark Machado is going to be here. He is, of course, from the Confectionery Cast podcast. And he's going to be casting his eye over loads and loads of different types of Easter eggs. I didn't have any idea how different they all were. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.